I started at Hasbro in July of 1978, and I worked until March of 1996. I worked on G.I. Joe from 1979 through 1994. Bob was interested in bringing back G.I. Joe. As soon as it died, he saw that there wouldn't be an opportunity to bring it back. And the way he wanted to try and bring it back originally, and the reason I got to know Bob and become as friendly with Bob as I am even to this day, is that I was the copywriter writing catalog copy, package copy, instructions. Bob came back to me one day with a strange request, and that request was, hey, do you think you could put together some presentation boards for me to take to Sears on G.I. Joe? So I said, well, what is it you're trying to do? He was looking to offer Sears, who was our biggest customer at the time, an exclusive, the opportunity for them to exclusively carry G.I. Joe. Now, his idea was go all the way back to the 1964 G.I. Joe, so the military World War II G.I. Joe. And so what I did was I went through old catalogs, and because this was the toy I had grown up with. I had played with the 12-inch G.I. Joe when it first came out in 1964. And so I went back to all the old catalogs. And what I did was I had color Xeroxes made, and I cut up old catalogs. And I made about 6 presentation boards for Bob, showing Sears how we could bring back G.I. Joe 12-inch exclusively for them. And when Bob went to Chicago to make the presentation went well, but Sears said it was way too soon to bring back G.I. Joe. So that was in 1979. In 1980, the R&D group had also, under Bob's direction, been thinking of ways to bring back G.I. Joe. What was happening at that time was the price of oil was still sky high from the previous oil embargo of the early 70s. So you could not make 12-inch figures profitably anymore. What you could make were smaller figures and smaller vehicles, because that was the real trick, was how do you sell, to get dollar volume, you needed to sell more expensive vehicles. For a 12-inch figure, you would be charging $100 for any vehicle of any substance, and you just couldn't do that. We took a look at what was going on in the action figure marketplace, and what was selling at that time were the Star Wars figures. And the Star Wars figures were 3¾-inch, limited posability, they sold vehicles, and Star Wars led the way by downsizing the figures, downsizing the vehicles. Even though they did some 12-inch figures, those were kind of minor parts of the line. So R&D, along with Bob, put together a mini proposal. I think it was 5 or 6 Army figures, a Jeep, and a tank. That was going to be the extent of the G.I. Joe line. And they made a presentation to management, and it was immediately thrown out the door. This isn't exciting enough. It's too soon. Every excuse in the book. That February, the 1980 Olympics, Bob was up in Boston at brunch, and the USA was playing Russia in hockey. If I'm not mistaken, they beat Russia to get to the final game for the gold. The restaurant immediately exploded into chants of USA, USA. That was on a Sunday. Bob came into work Monday morning and immediately said, we got to pull out all the stops. We have to figure out a way to do G.I. Joe. That there's just a spirit of patriotism sweeping the nation, and we've got to capture that spirit. So that's when we started work. I was brought on as a product manager to work with Bob. Rough Truck was, you know, presented, I think, in March with, you know, as a kind of a joke. But Bob used that as the spark to say, okay, maybe this is another sign that we should start work on it. And then we immediately started, you know, looking at that line that had been proposed 3 or 4 months earlier, and how do we make it more exciting. We dressed it up a little bit more, presented it to management again, and again management said, no way, there's no way we're going to do this. It's still way too soon. Bob wouldn't take no for an answer. I mean, every couple of months he was trying to get it brought back. Finally, I think Steven Hassenfeld got so tired of Bob constantly bringing up the subject that he finally said, I don't want to see this again. I will give you 2 weeks to work with Griffin Bacall, our advertising agency. I will give you 2 weeks to figure out a way to make G.I. Joe exciting. Because he said, right now it's not exciting. And that's when Griffin Bacall went off, brainstormed with us ways to make the brand come alive. Remember, this was in the days when Star Wars had $30 million movies. They had 2. And we had nothing. So we started brainstorming ways to tell the story, ways to make the characters exciting. Things that came up were baseball trading cards, so that's where the file card idea came from. We didn't have a movie, but perhaps we could do some kind of comic book. And I'll take credit for having at least mentioned that we should probably go to Marvel Comics, because they were the dominant comic book player at the time. And the next thing I know, a week later, Joe Bacall and Tom Griffin, the principals at the agency, came to us with a proposal. They had said they'd met with Marvel, talked to Marvel about doing a G.I. Joe comic book. Originally, it was going to be a one-shot. The inducement for Marvel to do it was, because Marvel, while they did licensed comic books, they weren't, and Larry Hama will tell you this, they weren't like top-of-the-line books. I mean, they didn't sell. They were a way to generate excitement, but the least experienced artists were put in to do the art, maybe the least experienced writers. It was a way for them to get a tryout. Marvel got excited because the secret weapon that Joe and Tom proposed was, we will spend $1 million on television advertising the comic book. Never been done before. The other thing that was brilliant about that was, in those days, in the early 80s, there were lots of rules and regulations about how to advertise to kids. And one of the things that you could not do in your advertising was have more than 6 seconds of animation. I think it was 6 or maybe 8 seconds. Of animation in a 30-second commercial. Well, how do you tell a story with 6 to 8 seconds of animation? So their idea was, we're going to tell the story with 30 seconds of animation because we're not going to advertise a toy, we're going to advertise a comic book. And there are no rules about advertising comic books. Marvel flipped out over that. That started the whole relationship. And it went from a one-shot to they sold almost 1 million copies of that first issue. They did a second and third reprinting, I believe, and then it just became a regular series. We couldn't see that far into the future, but we knew that when we were making our presentations to our retail customers, that's the first layer that you have to get through. Retail customers were excited for a couple of reasons. One, the point that Bob always stressed was, a mother could buy the entire line of G.I. Joe figures and vehicles for under $100. Two, it was a way for Hasbro to compete with Kenner, because Kenner was dominating the boys' action aisle with Star Wars, and they were using Star Wars as a weapon with retailers in order to have retailers take less popular toys. So they'd say, you have to take baby, you know, wets her pants, whether you like it or not, if you want to get this year's assortment of Star Wars figures. And it's done all the time. I mean, when you have a successful brand, you leverage one brand against the other. But the retailers, you know, were building up a strong distaste for that kind of sales tactics. So when they saw an alternative in G.I. Joe, they were all over it. And so we got a sense that at least with the retailers, we were going to have some success. We still didn't know if the kids were going to buy into it. I think Bob and I always felt it was going to be a success. I don't think we anticipated how big a success. If I'm not mistaken, our first year forecast for G.I. Joe was in the $12 to $15 million range. I mean, for Hasbro, who was at the time an $80 million company, that was a big number. The first year sales were close to $60 million. And that was, you know, far exceeded all of our expectations.